Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to Spirits Podcast, episode 67, Mayan creation story.
Yeah, boy.
I know.
People have been asking for the Central America and South American myths.
Yeah, probably more than any other.
I want to come through for y'all.
Yes.
I wanted to come through.
I'm very, very excited to share this with you guys. But you know what, Jules? I'm also excited to just give some shine to the people who help us make this show happen every single week.
Yeah.
So thank you so much to our supporting producer level patrons, to Neil, Philip, Julie, Sarah, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Maria, Cammy, Lindsay, Ryan, Shelby, Lynn, Mercedes, Phil, Catherine, and Deborah.
Y'all are great. We would totally let you see things. You'll understand.
You'll understand.
And I feel like every time I do that, it's a really, really vague one. And then I just have to be like, you'll understand. You'll get it.
It's like the Harry Potter chapter titles where the chapter title almost always in a little sketch, you see it and you're like, I don't know what that means. And then at the end of the chapter, prose, flip back to the beginning of the chapter and you look at it and you're like, ah, oh, that's what
you're
they
like,
meant.
Aha, that does make sense. The boy who lived. Now I know who the boy who lived is.
That's the troll. Mm-hmm. That's the snitch. Mm-hmm. That's the veil. Oh, no.
Oh, no. You know, spoilers for Mike.
If you haven't been listening to Potterless podcast, Julia was on recently to discuss Order of the Phoenix. And like, honestly, Julia, I know now how people feel when they listen to Spirits. Cause I'm just like, damn, she's so smart. Damn, aww, that's a good reference. Like, oh my, like, honestly, I love that book a lot. And it made me see things that I haven't seen before. And I love your appearances on our podcasts and others.
Oh, I'm super flattered. I'm legit blushing. You can legit see it.
She is. And she has a very cute bee printed collared shirt on. And
I wore it because it's your birthday while we're recording this.
Hey.
And you love the bees.
You know who else loves bees? Or you know who else I love as much as I love bees?
Our legend level patrons.
Our legend level patrons. Sandra, Ashley Marie, Buggy, Leanne, Ashley, Shannon, and Cassie.
Y'all are great. We hope that you find all of the cute bee pattern things that you want.
And to look out for your next box of physical stuff, which is coming to you very shortly. And finally, before we get to the excellent episode this week, we would love to thank our sponsor, RX Bar. This is really awesome, like no-nonsense energy bar. They have exactly what's in it printed on the packaging. They're delish. They're good to have on the go. I have in my bag all the time because mm-hmm. between day job, the podcasts, social life, you know, going to museums, like doing things in the city, you sometimes just need a snack on the subway.
Yeah, and a delicious and healthy snack at that.
Exactly. So if you go to rxbar.com/spirits, you can enter the promo code spirits at checkout for 25% off. Stock up for yourself, for your soccer team, for your roller derby league, whatevs.
I want to know all of your roller derby names now.
Oh my gosh, please.
Tell us.
Julie, what would your roller derby name be?
It would be Carnage San Diego.
Oh my God. I think mine would be Hardy Boy with an I.
Is that a wrestling joke?
The Hardy Boys.
Yeah, the Hardy Boys.
No, Julia, the okay. Nancy Drew alternate lesser inferior one.
There's also a wrestling tag team, which are two brothers, and they're called the Hardy Boys with a Z at the end.
No, I would be the Hardy Boy with an I.
Okay.
Adorable. Anyway, without any more distractions, enjoy Spirits Podcast episode 67, Mayan Creation Story.
So, Amanda, we've gotten a lot of requests for some Central and South American myths.
Yes.
And I should preface this with, I've mentioned it a couple times on our live streams and our Instagram live stories and that sort of thing. But I've never totally felt comfortable kind of leading a episode on that just because I understand that you and I as white folks probably shouldn't be talking about that because of just the history of colonialism and just shittiness that white people did to
narratives erasing Native narratives, especially, you know, cultures that are living and evolving and, you know, dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this situation, though, I was looking up different sources and stuff like that and found a source that is a legitimate source from the Mayan people.
Hmm.
And I thought, okay, I feel I did a lot of research and I felt comfortable enough that I figured, hey, Amanda, why don't I tell you the creation story of the Mayan people?
I love that so much. I can't wait. And I would also like to extend the invitation to listeners to send us recommendations for scholars, for friends, for relatives, people you know that talk about Central and South American myths.
Mm-hmm.
It can be someone's aunt. It can be, you know, a professor you have. It can be you if you grew up in a culture that has something to do with this. But we would always love to talk to people who have firsthand experience.
Maybe we can do a voicemail episode on that or something
like
that.
Send us voicemails. If you are Native, if you are Central or South American, Indigenous to any place, we would love to kind of group you know, voicemails together to have you teach us.
Yes.
And that would be dope.
Because we do have so much to learn.
We do.
We do.
That's why we do this.
We portray ourselves as quote unquote experts, or at least I do.
Yeah.
But I have so much to learn still. So
yeah, we are experts at learning and we love to invite you to learn along with us, but you know, we are not always the people that should be talking.
Yeah. That's true. That being said, I'm going to talk about it for a little bit and people can correct me. I am open to the idea that I don't know everything about this topic, but I think it's really interesting and I figured a brief introduction is in order.
Let's do it.
All right. The story of the creation of the world for the Mayan people is told by the Popol Vuh. This is a cultural narrative that recounts the mythology and history of the K'iche people, which is one of the indigenous peoples that made up the Mayan civilization.
Mm-hmm.
So this group is from what is now modern day Guatemala.
Awesome.
Yeah. So their name actually means many trees, which I think is kind of beautiful.
Yeah. Quite forested, I assume.
Yes.
And that's awesome. Just like that idea of like, you know, tribe of people, group of people as like a like close-knit cluster of trees. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sweet.
Yeah. And when you get to a certain part in this creation myth, you'll kind of see why that is sort of an inspiration.
Motifs.
Yes,
my favorite.
Motifs. Mm-mm-mm. So the Popol Vuh was written before the Spanish conquest of Guatemala and was originally preserved through oral tradition and was first officially written down in 1550.
Cool.
The name means Book of Community or Book of the People. And it is an extremely important cultural document since early accounts of Mesoamerican mythologies were not preserved or either were purged by the Spanish conquistadors.
Yes, part of colonialism is erasing and delegitimizing local culture to make the culture of the conqueror the only like state-sanctioned one available.
Yeah, so in my notes it says, so fuck those dudes.
Fuck those dudes.
Yeah. But I want to specify that, like a lot of texts like this, the K'iche people don't use the term mythology for what the Popol Vuh recounts. This is, according to the Maya, the history of their people.
Yes.
So keeping that in mind going into the story.
Awesome.
So when it comes to the Mayan narrative, the origin of many natural and cultural phenomena is told with the moral aim of defining the ritual relationship between mankind and the environment.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, of course. So when I say that, I mean, hey, when we're telling these stories, it explains what, like, it puts into perspective what the human being's role in the environment and in the world and in the sky is.
You know exactly. What I mean? Like, I mean, and isn't that what we ask when we turn to stories?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Is who am I and what is my place here?
Yes. And also, why is the sun rising? Why do the seas move it the way they do? That sort of thing.
Exactly.
So, mythology has always been about explaining the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
So the Maya do a really interesting job in portraying that.
Can't wait.
So what we'll see is an explanation for the origins of the heavenly bodies, the mountains, weather, animals, corn, diseases, and even societal inventions.
I love all those things.
I know. All those things are so good.
So stoked.
We also talked about that a lot in the Inanna episode when we were talking about the meh. But first, we start with the creation of the world as described with the Popol Vuh. And also, the end of it.
End of the world.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So, are we going to get into that whole prophecy situation?
No. We're not going to talk about that.
Okay.
That's a little bit too complicated for what we're going to be talking about today. First, the earth was created by the wind of the sea and sky. The book of Kilam Balam of Chumaye relates the collapse of the sky and deluge, followed by the raising of the sky and the erection of the five world trees. So it starts with the world being created by the wind of the sea and sky, and then it relates the collapse of the sky into a deluge. And that's how the world ends.
Of rain? Yeah. Or like everything.
Of
like
everything.
Sky breaking and everything falls down.
Everything falls apart, and then the sky is risen again when these five world trees grow.
That's awesome. And that's a way more kind of like naturalistic version of something like Ragnarok that we discussed in our Norse two-parter.
Yep.
Where like the earth has a cycle and a life and a death just like everybody else does.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. I like the idea of just like water and sky existing before land, you know?
I do too. And if we're going to talk a lot about Western creation myths versus these non-Western creation myths. So
Western here defined as European and the places that Europeans conquered.
Yes. What are us white people would call Western.
Yes.
Yes. But we'll talk a lot about the similarities, but also the major differences between the two.
Sure.
But much like this story, the creation of the world starts with just the waters above and below.
Yeah.
And then the separation in which other things can inhabit the existence.
And, you know, I have this image. You know, mentioned before that Julia and I grew up on a town sort of right near the beach. And so being able to like walk out there, drive out there, whatever, and kind of take personal time just looking out at the water.
Yeah.
You know, when you stand on the shore with like the waves at your feet and look out and all you see is sky and water.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that feel like the beginning or the end of something, right?
It does.
Like,
absolutely.
Land is behind you. You don't see your own feet. You know, you don't see the sand beneath you.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you just look out and it feels primordial. And so to have a creation myth that so vividly like brings up that image of the forces of sea and sky meeting to kind of make something at the horizon point. Like, that looks just like a point from which, you know, land can burst for the
first
time. Right.
It feels like all of existence is stretched out in front of you when you stand like that.
Or all of potentiality.
Yes.
You know?
I like that. Oof. From there, the creator gods attempt to create beings that have hearts and minds that could keep the days, quote unquote. Or in other words, could invoke, worship, and remember the gods. But the interesting part of the story, and the main story that we're going to be telling in this, is the fact that it takes four tries to get it right.
Ooh, yeah. I love a myth where people try and fail and then get it right.
Yeah, so actually I want to just take a moment to talk about how so many early mythologies have very human-like anthropomorphic gods.
Yes.
So like you and I being raised in the Catholic Church, there are so many depictions of the Christian God as omniscient, omnipresent, and all powerful.
Yes.
But there's actually a really interesting insight to early Judaism when you read the Bible. In certain parts of Genesis, God is able to smell things. God cannot locate Adam and Eve in the garden, that sort of thing.
Yeah, walking among the creation, right?
Mm-hmm. He very much has a human interaction or a human-like interaction and is seen as very anthropomorphized.
Yeah, like a lived experience.
Yeah, like it says in the Bible, God enjoyed the smell of like cooked meat. Like that's a thing that is said about God, because he is down there smelling things. He's not just smelling all things at once. He's smelling the cooked meat that is being offered to him.
Yeah, and for, you know, as like tactile as Catholic worship can be, you know, there's a lot of like rising, standing, kneeling, sitting, smelling incense, you know, tasting bread and wine and things like that. The idea of God is so far removed. Like, we are very much not of the Protestant tradition that God is a personal and personally experienced thing.
Yeah.
And for us, it's very much like through ritual, you know, we can communicate with and get a sense of God. And so, you know, having that be my standard that I was raised in, you know, any kind of story or depiction, or even like Westworld, you know, where you have Anthony Hopkins like walking through the world that he put together and like touching the flowers and tasting the food.
I love that. That's a really good comparison.
Ooh, thank
good
you.
Job.
Thank you. But it's so incredible to imagine that, like, you know, it boggles the mind. Like, it shouldn't be, you know, that the creator of a realm can like walk among the realm. It just sort of defies logic, and it's really dope.
Right. So my question is, and I guess we can answer it at the end of this story, why did early humans prefer the idea that gods are like us?
Right.
But also, I'm curious as to why you think many religions moved away from the anthropomorphic god, the god like us.
Yeah. I mean, my hypothesis, if we're going to be really scientific about this, hypothesis is that as human beings started to take power and be proxies for gods on Earth, the idea of God as a peer was a threat. And so being able to abstract your ruling authority and say that they, you know, have powers too big for us to understand in a realm that we haven't lived in a way that their, you know, experience and actions are either mediated through the ruler or just kind of sporadic, like locusts, right, or plagues or stuff like that. That's my kind of hypothesis, is like human beings started to take on
more authority.
Offices and like rules that had previously been delegated to the divine.
Interesting. So the argument being that if God becomes all powerful, he has more authority.
Yeah. And if God is unknowable and inscrutable and you have to access him through ritual and institutions, mm-hmm. Those are all things that human beings can control.
Interesting. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. We talked in the Inanna episode about that kind of like divine gift of self-rule mm-hmm. that Inanna gave, you know, to her people.
Yeah.
And also that like John Locke promises, you know, and it kind of talks about how, you know, self-rule is divine. And even that, you know, that's kind of a more optimistic way to say, you know, we don't need God to be like a peer. We can do that for ourselves and, you know, kind of export to and outsource the mystical and the stuff we don't understand to some other thing that is not like us and that can solve problems we can't solve and give answers that we can't give. So that's my guess.
I like it. And we'll talk a little bit more about this at the end of the episode. Right. But let's get to the story.
I'm a little bit wine drunk and I'm ready for the story.
I know you are. I love it. So the first effort that the gods do is create animals and living creatures, as well as birds and flying life forms.
Adorable. I love this taxonomy.
But because animals cannot talk, they were unable to worship the gods in the way that the gods wanted.
Okay, that's a self-invented problem, gods. That's a self-invented problem.
Well, a lot of the problems here are self-invented. You'll see.
I mean, definitionally, I guess they invented all things, including problems. Exactly. But okay.
Yes, they did. and so the gods consider their first effort a failure because the animals can't worship them.
So what happened?
Seeing that the animals weren't going to make the cut for their worship, they started the human experiment.
Oh, no.
the first thing they did was create humans from earth and mud in order to make their bodies.
Those golem vibes, though.
Yes. Also, in certain stories in Genesis, God kneels onto the ground and creates Adam out of the earth.
Clay, right? Yeah. And then Eve from the rib, which is not a way to do sociology in the 21st century.
Only one of the stories, though.
Yep.
There's a story where he just snaps his fingers and she's there.
There is. So
that's good. But the problem with earth and mud is that each time that they tried to animate the humans, their bodies would fail, simply dissolving and disintegrating, and were unable to stay together.
Oh.
It's kind of sad.
That is sad, but also sort of like, I've been there too. Like, I have tried to make little, you know, figures that stand up out of straws, and then the straw gets wet, and then it falls over. You know, like, it's such a, like, wonderful kind of image of, like, divine forces playing in a new realm by the new realm's rules, you know, like if you can summon land out of water and sky and gravity comes into effect, right? And like all the other forces.
Yeah, you're like, oh, fuck, damn, this human doesn't work anymore. I broke it.
It makes me laugh. I like it.
Jake and I have been binge watching Gotham lately.
Yeah.
Because we're big comic book nerds.
You are. Confirmed.
But they just introduced the character with Mr. Freeze.
Yes.
Do you know anything about Mr. Freeze?
I know that in The Flash, he's played by the Prison Break guy.
That's Captain Cold.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Mr. Freeze in the films that you might know was played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. The backstory for Mr. Freeze was invented like in 1994, I want to say, from the Batman animated series. And it's actually one of the like few animated shorts like that won an Emmy.
Huh.
Like, it's a beautiful storytelling, but basically Mr. Freeze is a scientist who, his wife is dying slowly of like a degenerative disease.
Oh, shit.
So his goal is to freeze her so that he can find the cure.
Got it.
And then bring her back to life and cure her. On Gotham, he's about to do that until she like switches out the formula so that her body dissolves instead of freezing the way it's supposed to.
She wanted to go.
Yeah, she wanted to go. So I've been thinking a lot about that when we were talking about this story.
Wow, Jules, very dark.
Yeah,
thank you for that image.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure. So the gods failed, and so they next chose to incorporate wood into the bodies of the humans. So it's wood.
Yes.
And also mud and earth.
We are so far following the development of human dwellings as well.
Yes. So the gods finally succeed and the first man is created.
Ooh.
So here's a great quote actually from the Popol Vuh for this moment.
Okay.
They came into being. They multiplied. They had daughters. They had sons. These mannequins, wood carvings. But there was nothing in their hearts and nothing in their minds. No memory of their mason and builder. They just went and walked wherever they wanted. Now they did not remember the heart of the sky.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What language. That's beautiful.
It's really, really pretty.
And via translation, too. Like, I can't imagine the that moment in an oral storytelling tradition.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Like,
ugh.
No, and I like the idea of they're just these beings that are walking around. And I love the line, they had no memory of their mason and builder.
That absolutely stood out to me, not just because my family are masons and builders.
I knew that would help.
Yeah, like it really, oh man, I love that so much. And I'm not somebody who believes in God, but I imagine and I have read things that talk about the unenlightened, right? Mm-hmm. Or like the people who haven't seen the truth or who haven't accepted God or who haven't, you know, in Westworld, realized that it's all a,
I'm just leaning in.
Who haven't realized that it's all a game. That is a kind of simulation of reality. And
well, in Gotham, no, I'm kidding.
But point being, those people are also walking around without knowledge of their mason and builder.
Yeah.
Like per those kinds of perspectives. Mm-hmm. And it is so kind of beautiful to imagine early humanity as like achieving that sort of actualization, you know, and like perspective.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Mayans got it right.
Yeah. So even though the gods had successfully created a living thing, they were not capable of worshiping the gods in the way that the gods wanted.
Sure. I mean, not understanding or knowing about or being able to conceive of right. The kind of larger context.
Because the gods were so discontent with their creation, they destroyed humanity in a great flood. Sounds familiar.
Lots of floods, man. Yeah. Lots of... one of those things, questions that you would ask God if God actually exists. What's the floods, man? Was there one?
The floods?
Was there many? Was it a story? Huh? Come on.
I think something had to have happened, you know?
I mean, everybody experiences great, you know.
Right.
Once in a while, you're bound, no matter where you live, there's going to be a great flood at some point. Mm-hmm. But not like a great, great flood.
Right.
Right. Not like tsunami.
That's why I have to assume that something happened.
I know. And like, surely we'd be able to tell with geology. Like, we know when ice age just happened. How about giant floods? But maybe that is an ice age and people didn't live long enough to see it become icy. Just watery.
Maybe.
Archaeologists, geologists.
Get at us. So another interesting part of this story in the Popol Vuh is the fact that monkeys survived as the only descendants of the third effort to create man.
Makes so much sense because they are very close to us.
Yes, but they're not capable of worship. So
I mean, arguably.
Not that we know, at least.
Yeah.
I don't study monkey sociology, so I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder, man, I wonder all the time what animals are thinking. Anyway.
Who's that woman who lived with the gorillas for so long?
Jane Goodall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I envy her. I had a book on her that I was like just
you.
Super
I remember
into.
That. And I'm sure that either you bought that or I bought the same book for my brother Austin when he was first learning to read. Didn't really care for reading, but that was a book that he was really into. Mm-hmm. Aw.
She was cool. I like her a lot. Now I'll get to the rest of the story, Amanda. But first, I need a refill. And this mezcal is not going to fill itself.
This week, we are sponsored by RX Bar. Julia, what are RX bars?
RX bars are a whole food protein bar. So what does that mean? That means that their bars are made with 100% whole ingredients. They are transparent and upfront with their customers, and they label all of their core ingredients, egg whites, dates, and nuts on the front of the package, and the ingredients that make up the texture and taste on the back. So like 100% real cacao, coconut, etc. Like all these really delicious and pure and cool foods.
Yeah, they're really well designed. The front is just like a pretty color that sort of indicates the flavor, like raspberry, blueberry, maple, etc. And then they list what's on it. And as a former vegan who found it really, really hard to, you know, buy things in stores because you look on the back and it's like any of these just bizarre ingredients could potentially be an animal product. Mm-hmm. Seeing something that's like, hey, hello, like we are eggs and dates. I'm like, oh, thank God. Thank you so much.
Good to know.
And it turns out that eating just like actual real food tastes very good. So like you can taste the fruit or the spices. Like there's one with sea salt in it, and you know that I love me some sea salt.
The maple sea salt. Mm-hmm. That would go really well with the mezcal we're drinking.
That's true. Yeah. And I think maybe something fruity as well, like a raspberry or a blueberry, depending on if you mix the mezcal with something, or maybe even the coconut. That would
Coconut would be good.
Yeah. Kind of like fruit pairing. But, you know, in addition to eating them with your BFF while recording podcasts, they're also great if you're on the go, if you're in the office. I have one in my bag all the time, and I just restock it when I get home if I've eaten it during the day, whether I'm like running between appointments or I have meetings and I have to like, you know, jump on the subway and just eat something in the middle. I try to eat actual, you know, meals when I can. Yeah. But listen, if you're in a pinch, sometimes you just need one.
Right. Sometimes you just want to crunch down on one right before you get to the gym or something like that. I always go to the gym before I eat dinner. Yeah. So it's always nice to have something in my stomach for my, you know, body to burn before my workout. So these are perfect for that. I use it almost every day.
Exactly. And I hear that egg white protein is actually like easy for your body to absorb. So won't get like tummy troubles, you know, if you're on the go and eating something real quick.
You know all about tummy troubles.
I do. Griffin McElroy and I just live that IBS life.
I'm so sorry.
You know, we're here for it. But if you want to join our cool, cool club of RX Bar having ladies on the go,
yeah,
you can get some at rxbar.com/spirits and enter the promo code spirits at checkout. These aren't in stores various places, but you can get a quarter off, 25% off. You can stock up, put a box in your car, put a box in your house, you know, give it to, like I said earlier, your roller derby team, your skeleton team. Skeleton scares me. The Winter Olympics just ended. Yeah. I'm mourning it a little bit.
Your figure skating team.
That also scares me, though, because like when they make the little landings, I feel like they're going to just fall over. I'm scared.
Did you watch the men's figure skating, by the way?
Dang. It's too gay for me to miss.
It's so good.
So good.
Oh, man.
But anyway, RX bars are available at rxbar.com/spirits. And then that code is spirits for 25% off. Make sure you use it so that they know that you came from us.
Yeah.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Have some snacks.
Now, snacks in hand, mezcal refilled. Let's get back to the show.
So the fourth and final effort is where things get interesting. So the gods take corn and mix it with water to create the flesh of humans. But like any good story, there was another problem. I'll quote again from the Popol Vuh for this. This time, the beings shaped by the gods are everything that they hoped for and more. Not only do the first four men pray to their makers, but they have perfect vision and therefore perfect knowledge.
So why do they have to pray?
Exactly. So there's the problem. The gods wanted to create beings that would worship them, but not something that would have the ability to potentially become like the gods themselves.
Oh, this, I mean, just casually hitting at the real crux of humanity here.
Yeah.
Mind creation myth.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So they devised two ways of limiting their abilities to just worship.
Okay.
They put fog in the humans' eyes, taking away their perfect vision and therefore knowledge.
Yep.
They also gave the first four men a wife each, and these couples would lead to the creation of the K'iche' lineages.
Hmm. And so how did that alter their perfect knowledge?
They were just distracted.
Oh,
because
okay.
They had other humans to interact with and stuff. And then had babies and children and whatnot.
Life happens.
Yeah, yeah, life happens. Huh. That's like, you know, when you get married, you know, life is pretty basic. The same idea, basically, as when you're dating someone. And then you have a baby and then everything changes.
That's what I hear.
That's what I hear, too. And then you just start worshiping the gods and don't become your full potential.
You go, yeah, I mean, I read an article yesterday about like women's career ambitions changing after bearing children and like the gendered labor
that terrifies
you know,
me.
That, mm-hmm. that necessitates having a family. Yeah, anyway. Everything else is new again.
Just like hyperventilating over here. It's fine.
Oh boy.
I feel like I'm making it seem like I'm going to have a baby. I'm not having a baby anytime soon. Just
you're getting married
record.
At some point,
yeah.
Sometime.
Yeah.
I actually, we had a listener email us recently to say that she's a little bit disappointed. We were talking about saggy boobs in, I think, the Mami Wata episode. And then we were like, oh man, saggy boobs. I don't know. And like, to be clear, boobs of all kinds are incredible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm just looking forward to my future and aging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one part of it. Mm-hmm. And aging terrifies me.
Yes.
Not like the aged body. But the fact that I'm going to die one day. And like, yeah. That is what I mean when I say like, huh.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Actually, yesterday was Valentine's Day.
It was.
And Jake and
at the time of recording.
Yes. And Jake and I were like getting ready for bed. And all of a sudden I just start clawing through my hair and pulling out gray hairs. And Jake is like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm pulling out the gray hairs. He's like, they're not even there. I'm like, I can see them. They're physically here. He's like, you're fine. It's okay.
Yeah. I'm a fan of asking hypotheticals like, you know,
will you love me if I have gray hair?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, would you love me if like half my skin was gone?
That's such a random thought. Just half of it. Like,
yeah.
I'm a weird Attack on Titan person.
Yeah. 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 Like, would we date if I was transfigured into a pancake? Would we date if I was transfigured into one of those Aquaman in season 2 of Buffy? The swim team boys. They turn into like creature from that fish movie.
Creature from the Black Lagoon?
No, the new one.
It's the same fucking creature, but okay.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah. That one.
Shape of Water.
I like that movie, but yeah, like yes. like would we date if I was that creature? Like, I don't know. Maybe.
I would still be your friend if you were that creature.
Thank you. Anyway, if you ask enough hypothetical questions, then people will love you forever.
Yep, that's true. Or at least they'll agree to until it actually happens. Love.
At least we know that our love is unconditional.
I know, baby.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Let's get philosophical, because that's the end of the story.
Oh, please.
So a couple of things that I like about this story and would like to discuss.
Yeah.
Bit. What does it say about a civilization that the gods had to experiment so much to create human beings? Does that mean that human beings are more valued because it took so many tries to get them just right? Or does it put human beings in sort of a lower light because they're this imperfect process? In your opinion.
Yeah. I mean, my first instinct was to feel like humanity's a little bit cheapened
mm-hmm.
because we are like intentionally handicapped by the gods.
Yes, I agree with that.
Because, you know, we like to imagine that we are kind of flawed creatures, like striving for more mm-hmm. and striving for like some hypothetical, you know, ideal. I think that might be a kind of Christian belief, like you're born with original sin.
I mentioned that in my notes.
Excellent. And not that like there is an ideal that you could achieve, but instead humanity, you know, is tragically flawed and you have to like mm-hmm. redeem to, you know, make your most self possible. And I just like the narrative that like we are born with what we have and we can try despite ourselves to transcend those parts to me is really motivating.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, to learn that like I am like version 2.0 of a thing that was too good.
4.0.
Yeah, exactly. A 4.0 and 3.0 is actually too good.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't be good enough to be a peer with that created me. But instead I am like, it's like playing with a laser with a cat.
Yes.
You know, like,
or like pretending to throw a ball for a dog, but not actually throwing it.
Right. And I don't know, like there's no way for the creature to win. Like there's no way for me to win if I was created as a thing that definitionally can't be on par with the gods. And now I'm realizing that makes me sound like I want to win at life, which I don't. I just want to like be here and have a pretty good time and make a good impact on the world. But yeah, that was my first reaction at least.
Well, that's not making you seem like you want to win at life. That's making you seem like you want humanity as a whole to get better, to get
yeah, it's to potential, elevate itself. Right? Exactly. But if we are created not to be the highest possible like elevation of stuff, then like I don't know, that's a little bit demoralizing.
Well, okay, here's a counterpoint that just from the way I see it. I think that we have the potential to be those things. That sure. If we, you know, and the gods, you know, the gods are fickle in a lot of the mythology that we talk about.
Yeah.
The gods could decide, oh, you know what? We actually do want the humans to be
we're
at
lonely.
Our level again. And they take playmates. Away our fog and we become their equals.
Yeah.
That's always a possibility. You know what I mean?
That's true. Like it's been done. Like yeah. 3.0 was there, and we know that there is at least the possibility. It's like it's a what's her face in Runaways taking off her bracelet.
Oh, Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Carolina just ascending to her awesome rainbow badass lesbian that she is.
Right. And so what I'm viewing as like a hard ceiling of 3.0 could do it, but 4.0 never could. You're saying like, no, there's evidence that there is like another plane of existence that should we, you know, try hard together to advance is possible.
Yeah. And it's like the glass ceiling.
Mm.
We can break it. There is a ceiling there, but yeah. We can't get past it.
Yeah, it's true. And it seems impossible, but actually it's just like structural.
Yeah. The gods have set up a structural
yeah, handicap.
Yeah, that we can potentially overcome. You don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
And I mean, there is so much here also about like, I don't know, the tragedy of humanity, sure. Right? Is that like we know enough to know that it's sad that we die. Like we know enough to know that we can't be perfect. We know enough to know that like when we accept love, that the other person is flawed and there's risk and like we're just going to do our best together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that kind of curse of awareness.
Yeah. It's the allegory of the cave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, if our listeners don't know the idea of the allegory of the cave, it's about realization, like a human's ability to realize more and more as more information is granted to them.
Yeah.
I guess we could talk about that, or I'll link in the description about the allegory of the cave. But
yeah, and also reminds me of a book by C.S. Lewis, who mm-hmm. wrote the Narnia Chronicles or Chronicles of Narnia. But also,
I like the Narnia Chronicles, the spinoff series, the reboot.
It's the TV reboot. Yeah. But also wrote a number of really interesting books about Christianity that helped me as an adult who had kind of moved past the Christianity I was raised in, but wanted to understand Christianity as, you know, other people experience it, yeah. Like just like what that would be like to learn about it for the first time. Read those books and they really, really helped me kind of see things in a new light and have a little bit more kind of patience and respect for people who live like that.
Yeah.
For people who have that belief system as a part of their life.
Yeah.
But anyway, he has like a really elaborate kind of metaphor for somebody realizing that the world is like bigger and bigger and more complex and more complex. And life is like, you know, like a picture, a person like rising up in a balloon, like seeing how much smaller the thing that they thought was the whole world is.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful kind of book involving a bus, like a bus going up into the sky. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's really good. And I will include a link in the description.
That's awesome. So kind of the last thought I want to touch on is the sort of an interesting topic that I'd like to think about. How does the creation myth reflect how we view humanity? So how does a society's creation myth reflect how they view humanity? So, for example, since we talk about Christianity and Catholicism before, we have the story of the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
And because of the misdeeds of Adam and Eve, we know that Christians, or at least Catholics, believe that humans are inherently sinful. We're born with original sin.
So, and the tendency towards sin.
Right.
And that through effort and allegiance and, you know, right behavior and the help of institutions and others in society and your mm-hmm. family and you know, whatnot, you can overcome humanity's default state, which is sinful.
Right.
And you can achieve, you know, perfection.
Right. So the argument in this situation would be that...
Not perfection. Perfection is God. You can achieve God-likeness.
Okay. That's a fair correction. So my argument in this would be that Christianity believes that human beings are inherently evil because we are born with sin, we tend towards sin, and we have to make an effort in order to be non-sinful, to, you know, to act towards godliness.
that varies widely between different kinds of Christianity.
Right, but I'm talking about
the kind that we grew up in specifically, because I mean, you could argue that like human beings were born perfect and then the original human being sinned. And mm-hmm. so that's just like a taint that's cast on all of his descendants.
Right. But now all human beings are.
Right. And so the question is like, is then the human as a creation of God, that is a perfect creation, yeah. but you know, a person messed up and now we are like cast in that shadow, you know like,
but like, are we perfect then because that human being
exactly right mm-hmm. if the bug was in the mainframe, like right. you know, is it perfect?
And that lends itself towards the anthropomorphic God like we talked about earlier, yeah. because if there was a mistake that this creature wasn't born or wasn't created perfectly,
yeah,
then whose fault is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting yeah. deep in here.
No, and like, I mean, we mentioned in our Jane Eyre episode with Vanessa Zoltan that kind of the question of suffering is where a lot of, it's like that's where like the rubber meets the road in yeah. terms of like talking about faith, mm-hmm. because any worldview has to reckon with the fact that there is suffering in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, is any God that could create suffering necessarily evil? Or neglectful, right? Mm-hmm. Or like there's so many questions that come up with that idea that, you know, can a good thing make evil? And I would say from a like human point of view, a lot of the parables we tell and a lot of the stories that, you know, live on have to do with the kind of tragedy of like everybody doing their best, but together through ignorance or miscommunication or greed or just like fate or bad luck, bad things come of it. Gift of the Magi, I think, is a good example, which I always see as like the importance of communication in a relationship.
Yeah.
But also like people can do their best and then like bad things happen anyway.
Right.
And so I don't know. Like I don't know where that leaves us.
I guess the question next would be, from what I told you about the Mayan creation story, do the Mayans believe that people are inherently good, that humanity is inherently good or perfect, or that humanity is you know, bad?
I don't think that's a question for me to answer. Yeah. You know, but like looking at it from the outside, mm-hmm. I love especially that this creation story contains something that's not enough, right?
Yeah.
Like, so the animals, you know, weren't capable of acknowledging worshiping the gods. Mm-hmm. What was 2.0?
The dirt people.
Right. Not couldn't stand up to the elements and mm-hmm. disintegrated. Three was too perfect. Four.
Well, three was wood so that they stopped disintegrating. And then four was perfect humans. And then they just put fog over their eyes.
Oh, I thought three was imperfect, was too perfect humans. And they were like, shut that down. But we are the perfect ones that then got sort yes. of a layer added. Yeah. Okay.
We were too perfect. So they put a glitch in our system.
Yeah. And I appreciate the clarification. But I love that there is like that, like the pendulum swung to both ends of mm-hmm. the arc
yeah.
and then settled somewhere in the middle.
Like, whoosh.
Exactly. And so often, like I talk about this a lot in artistic stuff. Like I'll say to you or you'll say to me sometimes, you know, if nobody ever has any kind of like criticism of the stuff we put out into the world, we're probably not trying hard enough.
Right.
Or if, you know, you never fail at anything you ever do, you probably aren't trying big enough things.
Yeah.
Like it takes failure to understand where your limits actually are. And so that's the thing that I try to embody at work a lot is like, if I never take on a project that I don't know how to do, I am not learning quickly enough, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm not stretching myself enough. And so to bring it back to the kind of societal level, mm-hmm. It's very cool to think that like, it's not about some kind of objective, you know, top of the pyramid or like end of the line, or it's not about like advancing our abilities as far as it can possibly go. Like there is value to being somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And like whether that means the most entertaining for the gods, right. Mm-hmm. Or the most like, you know, worshipful, but non-challenging to yeah. the gods. Like I don't know enough to know how those gods are characterized and obviously like what mm-hmm. their motivations are. But as a human being, like I don't know, I do a lot of work like in therapy and in my life to try to accept the fact that like flaws and uncertainty and powerlessness is a part of the human experience that we can't eradicate. Mm-hmm. And if we did, it would be really boring.
Yeah.
And that is like, that is what makes us human. That's what I love about our stories. That's what we love about the you know, hero's journey, where the hero like doesn't want to do something, is called to action, you know, tries, fails, tries again, succeeds. Like that is so, I think, like coded in our DNA to mm-hmm. be so satisfying.
Yeah.
Because we are just self-aware enough to know how inadequate we are, you know, in a lot of ways. And, you know, making peace with that, like, that's the mission of being human.
Right. And I kind of, I like the idea of, there's something comforting about the ideas. We were created for a specific thing.
Yeah.
And we were too good for it.
Yeah.
And then so now we are exactly where we're supposed to be, doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Like, well, if I were perfect, you know, that would be wrong. Yeah, that wouldn't be what I was here for.
Yeah. It's the, if every pork chop was perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs.
What?
Yeah.
Is that a saying?
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
If every pork chop was perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs.
I do not believe that. I think that's a thing that you experience in your family and no one else says.
You can Google it. It's a thing.
Listeners, get in touch.
Everyone can fight me on it.
I hear what you say, though. Like, you know, and so I have a tattoo that says, love the questions themselves. Mm-hmm. Quote from Rilke. And I'm getting another one soon that says, no feeling is final. And so to me, those are two really kind of complementary thoughts. The first of which is like periods of uncertainty and failure and casting about for like direction and meaning and hope, etc. That isn't just like stuff that you fast forward through to get to your real life. It is still life. And there is still like, you know, even if the feelings in your body aren't good, they're still feelings. And that still means that you're here and alive and like living and not, you know, completely devoid of, you know, humanity and living, which to me is how I experience depression, right? It is like really kind of numb. And so to me, it's a reminder that even in moments where I'm like, what do I do? There are so many, you know, that's like, that is still life. It's not like a crisis moment that removes me from my life. Like that is the business of living. Like that is where we get down to it. It's where we're like in the like mud pit wrestling, you know?
Sure.
And then the sentiment that no feeling is final is like, that will also end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, good feelings will, bad feelings will, hope will, despair will, you know, it's just a question of like, I need to trust that the next feeling will come and that
this too shall pass.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that I will be, you know, equipped to handle it when it does and just being a little bit trusting in my future self instead of paranoid and fearful and protective.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like to me, that is what's valuable and that's what's fun. And that's what I love getting to know other people in life and through stories, you know, is how everybody deals with their particular skills and burdens.
Yeah.
And like, that's what art is like making sense of that impulse.
Yeah.
And so if we were all so perfect that we needed to, you know, that like we were at the same level as the gods,
right?
You know, presumably the gods are creating the world for a reason. Like we never talk about that, right? Like what causes the gods to do all of this?
Yeah.
And in some cases it's love
and to be worshipped.
Some cases it's to be worshipped. Some cases it's, you know, it's not even addressed. Mm-hmm. But I think that the sort of implication there is like, if you achieve perfection, there's nothing else to fix in yourself or in the world.
Yeah.
You have to make a little microcosm and kind of, you know, give that gift unto others and kind of see how they deal with slightly different circumstances than your own.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as much as I admire Anthony Hopkins, all white linen suits,
Westworld.
I think I'm happy to be, you know, a chess piece in someone else's chessboard.
Yeah.
And to, you know, tell my own stories in art. But I don't want to achieve perfection. Yeah. You know, like
sometimes you don't have to be the most significant person in the room and that's okay.
I super don't. I want to like stand on the side with a glass of punch, shit talking with you and like admiring everybody else.
Hell
and
yeah.
Just looking at their stories and being like, God damn, everybody there is a little universe and I will never know what it's like inside their head, but I can damn well try.
Damn right. I think that's all we can say on this topic at the moment.
Yeah. And the next time you're at a dance and you're looking at everybody there and you're thinking about the fact that like each person is having a lived human experience that's as vibrant as your own. And you're never, ever going to be able to plug into that matrix and experience their life. And like, holy fuck, there are 8 billion of us. Remember
to stay creepy
and stay cool.
Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at
Spirits Podcast. We also have all our episodes, collaborations, and guest appearances, plus merch, on our website, spiritspodcast.com.
Come on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Throw us as little as $1 and get access to audio extras, recipe cards, director's commentaries, and patron-only live streams.
And hey, if you like the show, please share us with your friends. That is the best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.